And welcome to the just before Memorial Day 2026 edition of The Danger Zone. I am your host, Jim Two, and this is here. Hopefully you're listening to this on the SantaCruzVoice.com and or KSCO.com's Podcast Alley. And it was one of those kind of really, really weird weeks. I have a stack of stuff here, but then maybe I should probably just go a little bit off the beaten path here and just tell you about a more philosophical discussion here, in the sense that, how do you know when someone is not telling you the truth? Or how do you know when something is wrong, is the more abstract concept. And I bring this up because I was having some little chats with Copilot, artificial intelligence, and I was trying to figure out with Copilot, why the cost of gasoline was different in California than Nevada, right? Because, California and Nevada are right next to each other. And, we're trying to isolate certain things. So the first thing that I realized is I asked, hey, Copilot, what is the average price for a gallon of gasoline in the state of California? And, and this was yesterday. I think I was asking her that, or asking it, Copilot, this. And Copilot said $5.36 a gallon. And I'm like, wait. I just paid $5.60 a gallon a week ago. It's like, well, you live in the Bay Area and it might be higher in certain regions. So it's like, okay. And then, it's like I said, can you look again? And he's like, what is the lowest stated price per gallon in this, quoted price per gallon in the state of California? And then it said about like five, what was it? It was something ridiculous, like 556. And I'm like, wait. If you're saying the average price of per gallon of gas in California is $5.36, but the lowest price quoted in the state of California is 550 something, isn't there something wrong with that? And Copilot kind of admitted, that's something that's kind of wrong. And then he said, do it again. And then she came up with $6.14 a gallon, which is probably closer to the average price, because I think I buy my gas at Costco, so it's usually cheaper than other gas stations, right? Membership has its privileges, as they say. And so it got me to thinking. It's like, there are certain people that whatever an expert tells them or whatever they read on the interwebs or whatever, they'll believe, right? So, during the pandemic, when the pandemic first came out, Dr. Anthony Fauci said, masks aren't going to do anything. They're useless, right? Then within about a month or so, it's like, oh, no, you got to wear masks. Yet people just, blissfully just went along with it, despite the fact that he'd previously said that masks don't do anything and that they're useless in the context of the pandemic. And, the thing is, the media didn't really push him as to, hey, what changed? Because the reality is, when you look at the emails that eventually were released, where he was trading with various of his experts and whatever, he knew right at the beginning when the pandemic broke out in, January of 2020, and then towards February, where people started getting really, really concerned, and then in early March of 2020, where all of a sudden everyone got locked down, he knew that masks, in terms of preventing or slowing the spread of respiratory viruses, like the COVID or Wuhan virus, didn't do jack bleep, right? But yet, so initially he was right, and then a month and he changed his mind, but there was no studies in the interim over that first month and a half after the official start of the pandemic lockdowns that really would have changed his mind in terms of masks working. Yet he just said it, right? And most of my friends and family, they were wearing masks just because he said so. Right. And of course, because he said so, all the other quote unquote public health experts said so, despite the fact that, in March of 2020, he said masks aren't going to do jack. But so that's kind of one way you can spot when AI or any person in authority is full of crap, right? Is that it contradicts something that you kind of already know, right? So for me, when AI told me yesterday that the average price for a gallon of gasoline was $5.35 a gallon and I'd paid $5.60, right? I was like, wait a minute, there's gotta be something wrong. And I was like, okay, it's possible that, you know, maybe because I live in the Bay Area, you know, things cost more in the Bay Area than other parts of the state. So I was like, okay, let's find out. What is, you know, the lowest stated price for gasoline in the state of California right now? And it was like $5.50. It's like, again, so you see the contradiction, right? If the, how can the average price of gasoline be $5.35 a gallon in the state of California, but when the lowest stated price of gasoline in the state of California was $5.50 something, right? It just doesn't track. So as a general rule, you've got to be able to spot the contradictions, things that either are inherently contradictory, like if the average is this and then the lowest number in the average is more than the average, is like, no, that inherently doesn't make any sense, right? Or it's something that you, based on your own direct experience, something you actually perceive with one of your five senses, and it contradicts that, then, you know, it's one of those things where you can eventually tell, you know, where someone's trying to pull a fast one. Or, you know, when someone contradicts themselves, like Anthony Fauci, masks don't work. Oh, now everyone's got to wear a mask, right? And without the explanation of what changed between the masks don't work versus everyone's got to wear a mask, that's how you spot the bologna sausage. So, you know, and sadly, you know, most people aren't trained or educated enough to be able to make those evaluations, right? To spot where is it inherently contradictory, right? Because if you, for any one topic, if you know this whatever topic that is pretty well, you can spot something that if AI says something that contradicts something that you already know to be true. Right? Or you know, right? And most people don't know. Like, if you are completely unaware of a topic, like, well, most progressives are with economics or politics or history, or, right? You'll believe almost anything, right? And I think another example I can think of is, you know, the whole transgender stuff, right? You know, most of us who are over a certain age, we're taught, you know, basic biology, right? This is male, this is female, this is the definition of a male, this is the definition of a female, right? XY chromosomes, male reproductive organs, female reproductive organs, all that, you know, all that stuff, right? Then all of a sudden you're like, no, this is a woman. It's like, yeah, but he's got XY chromosomes, he's got a beard, he's got, you know, broad shoulders, an Adam's apple, and a penis and testicles. Well, no, that's because, you know, he identifies as a woman. It's like, no. Yeah. It contradicts what you've learned and what you've already known, and nothing new really changes that, other than some bologna sausage studies about people having different feelings of stuff. But yeah, so again, that's kind of how people, you know, that's kind of a, hopefully that's a good guide in how to spot the bologna sausage, or, you know, how to know when someone's wrong, is that when they contradict themselves, or when what they're saying contradicts what you know to be the truth, based on A, what you've learned before, or B, what you've actually perceived with your own senses and direct experience, as the case may be. But let's get on to this stack of stuff, and I guess the theme is Dems be going crazy. Let's see here. So this is from CNN today, I think. This is, the title of the story is Defund Then Abolish. A leading Democrat in Wisconsin's governor race urges abolishing police. This is by Andrew Kaczynski and M. Steck. What kind of name is M? But anyways, let's see. Years after mayors from Democrat cities reverse course on calls to defund the police departments, one of the leading Democratic candidates for governor of Wisconsin is running with a starkly different record. She didn't just back defunding the police, she called to abolish them. And unlike many of her party, she has neither deleted those posts nor renounced them. Francesca Hong has repeatedly called for abolishing police departments. According to the CNN K-File review of her social media posts, interviews, and statements, Hong, a 37-year-old state representative, Democrat socialist, wrote on X in 2020 she supported defunding the police as a first step towards abolishing the police. She later argued in 2021 that the police exist to uphold white supremacy. Defund, then abolish, reform cannot be an option, unquote. She's competing in a crowded Democrat primary field that includes Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, and State Senator Kendall Royce for the right to face Republican U.S. Rep. Tom Tiffany in a closely watched battleground race. Hogg and Barnes are the only candidates in double digits of 14% or 11% respectively, according to the Marquette Law poll released in March. A significant share of potential Democrat primary voters, 65%, are still undecided. Yeah, so, you know, I mean, so you might say, oh, well, she's just a fringe candidate. But, you know, she's the Democrat candidate leading the Democrat field in the primary for the governor of Wisconsin. So you can hardly say she's outside the mainstream, as the case may be. So, but you know, just think about it as a general rule. What could possibly go wrong if we didn't have any police? I know people might think cops can be a little over eager, ham-fisted, overly aggressive and stuff like that. But is it really a smart thing to have no cops? I mean, you'd think that most people would think that, you know, not having any police would be a terrible, terrible idea. But I guess if takes a progressive to embrace really, really stupid ideas or contradict what you already know to be the truth. But anyways, let's see here. This is from the Free Beacon, Washington Free Beacon. J.B. Pritzker administration depicts white people, cops, as mosquitoes in microaggression training that rails against color blindness. And let's see here. This is dated May 19 by Peter Hassan. Illinois Governor J.D. Pritzker's administration offers a taxpayer-funded training on microaggressions and other, quote, exclusionary behaviors that depicts white people and police officers as mosquitoes who suck blood from people of color. The training, which Pritzker's Department of Human Rights offers a, quote, private sector, government, and public participants, and which the Washington Free Beacon attended, is meant to, quote, increase knowledge, awareness, and prevention of discrimination and harassment issues, and offer solutions to employers and employees on how to appropriately respond to situations they arise, unquote. It defines microaggressions as, quote, everyday verbal, nonverbal, and environmental slights, snubs, or insults, whether intentional or unintentional, that communicate hostile, derogatory, or negative messages to target persons solely based upon their marginalized group membership. The training divides such microaggressions into two categories, those that are race-based and those that go beyond race. I like beyond me. Anyways, the former category includes color blindness, which the training says, quote, denies a person of color's racial or ethnic experience. It also includes the assumption of criminal status. For example, the store owner who follows a customer of color around the store and then to deny individual racism, including statements like, my best friend is black. The latter includes micro insults like calling a person of color articulate, as well as micro invalidation, which includes buildings named only after white men. I don't know about you, but if you called a white person articulate, is that racist? Yeah, right. If you call them inarticulate, you know, if you call a person of color articulate, is that if that's a micro insult, what if you call a person of color inarticulate, like Kamala Harris? Yeah, I mean, this just sounds like, you know, it sounds to me crazy, but again, it, to me at least, contradicts something I already know to be true, which is, you know, there is, you know, you should treat everybody the same. You should not try to incorporate a person's race to treat them any differently than you would. And, but, you know, again, that is color blindness, and that is the opposite of racism. And of course, to, you know, try to classify whole groups of people, be they white or black, or brown, or yellow, or red, or purple, or pink, or psychedelic, as mosquitoes, or bloodsuckers, or whatever, would be racist no matter who you say is the bloodsuckers or the bad people. But, you know, that's just what I know. Could it be that the Could it be that someone is pulling a fast one on me or on us in general, or that the entire DEI prospect is a giant program of institutional racism to train people to be hostile to a singular group of people based on their skin color? In this case, white. I don't know. Just a thought. Yeah, but anyways, more on the stack of Democrats be crazy stuff. This is from the San Antonio Current.com. May 18th, House candidate Maureen Galindo pledges to send American Zionists to internment camp. Let's see here. What did she say? Controversy-tarred congressional candidate Maureen Galindo this week pledged to transform a site south of San Antonio now used by the Trump administration to detain migrants. That'd be illegal aliens for you people in Capitola, into an internment camp for the American Zionists. Quote, she'll turn Karnes ICE Detention Center into a prison for American Zionists and former ICE officers for human trafficking, Galindo wrote in an Instagram post over the weekend, referring to herself in the third person. Yeah. Jim, too, never refers to himself in the third person. But anyways, quote, it will also be a castration processing center for pedophiles, which will probably be most of the Zionists. There you go. Oh, yeah. Now, Galindo's latest set of inflammatory remarks comes as the Democrat hopeful for Texas' newly drawn 35th congressional primary continues to draw national attention for remarks critics have called anti-Semitic and untethered from reality. The controversy snowballing as she heads to the May 26th Democrat primary runoff. Over the past week, Galindo has accused her runoff opponent, former Bexar County Public Information Officer Johnny Garcia, of participating in a human trafficking conspiracy orchestrated by billionaire Zionist Jews. She also pledged to turning Texas Public Radio, during a public radio interview, to put Garcia on trial for treason. Yeah, she sounds crazy. I'm wondering how she defines what an American Zionist is, because she basically wants to send them to a concentration camp and castrate them. Because according to her, most Zionists are pedophiles, so to speak. Yeah, and, you know, she says internment camp. What's the difference in this description between an internment camp and a concentration camp? Just asking for a friend. And, I mean, you know, so you have a Democrat running for Congress in Texas, basically calling for American Jews to be put into a quote-unquote internment camp, which is another way of saying concentration camp, and then being castrated. Sounds a little bit like the final solution to me, but hey, maybe I'm drawing strange, crazy parallels here. Now, in the defense of my Democrat friends, I think the Texas Democrat Party or the Democrat Congressional Committee probably is putting this gal on the, yeah, she crazy. We're not with her, but you know, who knows? Maybe she'll win the primary, and the case may be. And then, you know, she gets to run in the general election against, you know, whoever. Anyways, let's see here. Let's play like this. In my mind, I remember the Nazis during World War II sending Jews to concentration camps to be exterminated. I mean, maybe that's a huge leap from that to someone who wants to send Jews to internment camps to be castrated because she thinks most Jews are Zionists and most Zionists are pedophiles. Is that a crazy thought or is AI messing with me? Don't know. Anyways, this is more on the crazy Democrat pile. This is from Fox News. Unearthed posts show Dem Senate hopeful praising vulgar graffiti making crude porta potty admission, May 19th. Andrew Mark Miller. Let's see here. I think this is the Graham Plattner story. Yes, it is. Democrat Maine Senate candidate Graham Plattner, who is already facing criticism over past Reddit posts, made graphic sexual comments and has now deleted account about masturbating in portable toilets and explicit graffiti found in military restrooms. Yeah, I don't know who wants to masturbate in a porta potty because every time I go into a porta potty, I just want to get my business and get out as soon as possible. Some porta potties are so foul smelling and disgusting, I don't even want to do number two in them if I can prefer it, because you know the number two is still there and it reeks. But anyways, that's just me. But hey, if Graham Plattner likes to go into porta potties and masturbate, you know, I guess More power to you. No, go away. But anyways, what's the rest of the story say? Oh, in one March 2017 post on Reddit's r/military forum, Plattner responded to a discussion about nostalgic military smells by writing, quote, "I still have to jerk off every time I sit in a porta, ass sir. That blue water smell conditioned me." Okay. The archive posts were made under P. Hustle, a now-deleted Reddit account that Plattner previously acknowledged was his. In another post from March 2021 in Reddit's r/USMC forum, Plattner described a penis drawing inside a portable toilet while deployed overseas. Responding to the thread dedicated to so-called GWOT dick art, I think that's Great War on Terror or something like that, Global War on Terror, Plattner launched into an extended monologue praising explicit graffiti in unusually vivid terms, calling it beautiful and engorged and veiny and moving towards its penetrative glory, unquote. Ugh. Quote, "Oh, bleep," Plattner wrote. Quote, "You've got a hot rod bleep from Manas." Manas was a major U.S. military hub in Kyrgyzstan, used during the wars in Afghanistan. Plattner enlisted in the Marines in 2003 and served 3 combat tours in Iraq in 2010. He joined the Maryland Army National Guard for a 4th tour, serving the infantry in Afghanistan. He returned to Afghanistan 8 years as a security contractor. Yep. Normally, I would attribute comments like this to just adolescent humor attributable to youth, or hopefully sarcasm. You know, if it's sarcasm, you know, he gets derided. But I don't think he was being sarcastic. And then, of course, there were other comments that he posted, like women who get drunk and raped kind of deserve it, or attacking people, other veterans who were wounded in combat, saying they deserved it, or they were just sloppy and dumb. So, you know, that is apparently the presumptive Democrat nominee for the Senate Senate campaign for Maine to challenge Susan Collins. So, because I think the other major candidate running for the Democrat nomination in the state of Maine, I think her name is Janet Mills, dropped out because she didn't have any money. So you go. So that's the odd thing is, like, Plattner also has a SS tattoo from the Totenkopf Brigade of SS Nazis that actually, you know, did the Nazi stuff, right? And yet Democrats are like, no. Just because he has a Nazi tattoo doesn't mean he's a Nazi. In the same breath, they'll accuse Pete Hegseth of being a Nazi for having, like, a Maltese cross that says Deus Vult, which I believe is God wills it. So a guy who has a Maltese cross that says Deus Vult is a Nazi. A guy who has an SS Totenkopf Nazi SS tattoo on his chest, not a Nazi. See the Democrat progressive logic here? Or maybe AI, maybe their AI is messing with me, as the case may be. But you know, so I guess, you know, that's a, yeah, something to think about in the Democrat stack of stuff. Now, we have a couple stories from my home state, the lovely state of California. we have one from the New York, from the New York Post, or the California Post, as the case may be, where I think Tom Steyer is accusing Xavier Becerra of hiring influencers to puff up Xavier Becerra's campaign without disclosing the fact that they're being paid by Xavier Becerra to do so, right? Which apparently is a violation of California election laws. On the flip side, we have the Los Angeles Times article here, and they just slapped up the paywall on me to basically say that influencers are complaining about Tom Steyer, you know, hiring them to do the same thing for Tom Steyer, that Tom Steyer accuses social media influencers of paying them to do, without telling the influencers that they had a non-disclosure agreement. So, who is shocked that both Tom Steyer and Xavier Becerra are paying people to say, to say how great they are and how much they really, really love them and how they think they're great leaders and how their plans are great. And despite the fact that 6 months ago, these social media influencers, these people that are saying how great either Xavier Becerra or Tom Steyer are, probably had no freaking clue who either of these two jokers were. A shock. Who's wearing my shock face here? Shock face. Let's see here. So it's the AstroTurf is just hilarious. Now, and for Xavier Becerra, it's more hilarious because I would say about a month ago, no one cared who Becerra was. Becerra was barely, you know, just short of double digits in the polls. And now he's surging into the lead, right? So when he was running against a rapist, well, an alleged rapist in Eric Swalwell, no one gave a rat's ass about Xavier Becerra, right? But now that the rapist or the alleged rapist, the accused rapist, Eric Swalwell had to drop out, apparently the Democrat Party machine had to go somewhere, and apparently they didn't like Tom Steyer because he's a rich guy and he's crazy, right? Or he's too crazy even for the Democrat Party machine. And apparently Katie Porter, well, she's so pleasant. I'm sure she charmed them with her wonderful, warm, and loving personality. Get out of my effing shot. But anyways, and Matt Mahan, you know what I mean? I guess, I don't know. I mean, you know, he's mayor of San Jose, and apparently San Jose isn't as bad as Los Angeles or San Francisco or Oakland in terms of being effed up cities, but who? It probably doesn't help that Matt Mahan got into the race fairly late, started spending money relatively late, and said bad things about old Gavin Newsom, as the case may be. But yeah, it'll be interesting. Then on the flip side of the AstroTurfing, I pretend to like this guy because of the letter next to his name, we have Spencer Pratt, who might actually be getting actual, honest, to goodness, grassroots and bipartisan support. This is from American Greatness. Will Spencer Pratt realign California, by Edward Ring, May 20th? By every reasonable standard of governance, California's elected politicians have made a mess of the Golden State. Reciting the litany of failures has become so common that it's hardly worth the trouble. Chaotic, unsafe downtowns, retail businesses giving up and relocating, chronic government budget deficits, despite the nation's highest taxes, set to go higher still. Quote, needle exchanges and safe injection sites funded by taxpayers. Kids encounter drug zombies on the way to school. Parents dodge psychopaths in a grocery store parking lot. We've heard it all. We've seen it all. We're desensitized. We just avoid certain parts of town the best we can and tell ourselves it can't be helped. When we choose which candidate support, we know nothing is going to change. This is life in California. Even after preventable superfires ripped through several neighborhoods in Los Angeles in early 2025, destroying an estimated 16,000 homes, nothing seemed likely to change. The initial front-running candidates for mayor this year merely offered different downward trajectories. With incumbent Karen Bass, the decline would continue along a predictable path. More taxes to fund programs that were not failing for lack of funds, but because the programs themselves rested on preposterous assumptions. Get homeless drug addicts indoors, and they will begin to recover. Keep giving them clean needles. Don't demand sobriety in exchange for benefits. That's inhumane. Bass's opponent, Democrat Socialist Nithya Raman, embraces the same flawed assumptions and supports the same failed programs and promises to expand them all even more rapidly. Any of that false? You know, my progressive friends, right? California is an experiment in socialism that's slowly descending into bankruptcy, paralysis, and mass poverty. And Los Angeles is at the center of it all. But into this tightly choreographed exercise in manufactured consent, posing as voter choice, Spencer Pratt decided to run for mayor of Los Angeles, turning into a three-way contest that now offers voters a genuine alternative. Whether Pratt wins or loses, he is ushering a new era in both the tools of campaigning and messages that resonate. The tools are obvious. Incredibly creative videos produced in abundance at negligible cost using AI. But beyond the vivid hilarity of these videos or their most obvious message, clean up the city or watch it burn, these videos are also sending a far more sophisticated message. And they're doing it in a way that skirts the intellect and goes straight to the id That'd be the subconscious there, you wine moms and Capitola. Crucially, many of these ads don't even come from Pratt's campaign organization. Independent content creators, delighted with the popularity of his message, have rolled out hundreds of videos building on the themes that define Pratt's campaign. Consider the imagery of one of the more viral videos supporting Pratt's campaign, L.A. is worth saving. Nearly every frame is iconic. The scene opens with a rendering of the famed Hollywood sign in flames, then shows quick images of L.A. City Hall, then a posse of masked, black-clad thugs with DSA, Democrats Social of America, lettered on their uniforms. The camera looks upward at Karen Bass sitting on her throne, her face painted like the Joker, laughing derisively. Bass is flanked by Gavin Newsom, clad in royal garb while eating cake, and Kamala Harris drinking from what looks like an upturned wine bottle with a DSA thug standing behind her. Yeah, sounds about right. That's the weird thing, right? You know, compare and contrast. Tom Steyer and Xavier Becerra have to pay social media influencers to make bland, cliched statements about how great these guys are. Yet, old Spencer Pratt, who's running for mayor of LA, granted, different office, you know, doesn't have to pay anybody. In fact, these people are making these videos for him on their own time. And it doesn't cost a lot of money. He's probably not having to pay anyone. Maybe he pays him a little, I don't know, maybe he does pay him a little bit. We'll find out later, you know, if he makes it to the top two. But, you know, I think that's an interesting contrast between AstroTurf and grassroots. Tom Steyer, Xavier Becerra, AstroTurf. Spencer Pratt, grassroots. Now, if Spencer Pratt can win, I know it's a really long shot in LA because most LA is still, I mean, they elected Karen Bass in the first place, right? So at most, and LA is one of the more deep blue, pro-Democrat, progressive, far left, cuckoo parts of the state. But, there was an old saying that the definition of a conservative is a liberal who's been mugged. Well, have they mugged enough progressives in Los Angeles to turn them conservative and vote for Spencer Pratt? And, you know, even if Spencer Pratt wins, he still has a formidable task of turning LA around. And given that you've had like at least 12 to 16 years of the LA city bureaucracy and the LA city council being Democrat, he's got a lot of crap bureaucrats to kick out. So yeah, but if he can manage to turn LA around or just stop the bleeding, as the case may be, he might be on track to be the next Donald Trump. And because, you know, he is, unlike Donald Trump, he's really, really good at handling the media, turning questions around and framing issues. That's really, he's a very effective communicator. Now here, take this in contrast to old Karen Bass. Here's Karen Bass being interviewed by a CNN journalist. And this CNN journalist basically brings up, hey, you know, when you ran for mayor 4 years ago, you said your goal was to get rid of street homelessness in LA by the end of your first term. And it's not here. This is what she had to say in response to that question.
Jake Tapper in 2023, you said that your goal was to end street homelessness in LA by 2026. Mm-hmm. It's now 2026.
And we haven't ended it.
We have not ended it. And we're not close to ending it. How are you so off?
Well, basically, when I said that, it was at the beginning of my term. I am very committed to achieving that goal. I didn't anticipate some of the bureaucratic barriers that I would experience, but I am prepared to take those on now. And let me just give you an example. Los Angeles made a decision probably 20, 25 years ago to not address street homelessness, to focus solely on building. And granted, I have fast-tracked 42,000 units of affordable housing, but it still takes a couple of years. So basically, the policy of LA City and LA County was we could accept street homelessness as long as we were building. We didn't anticipate the problem metastasizing.
Yeah, I call baloney sausage on this, right? Because that's what everyone was saying, even when she was running for election. And here's the irony, is that if you compare the homeless population numbers for the city of Los Angeles for the year 2026 to 2022 or 2020, you know, right around, you're just a couple years before she got elected, because we didn't count the homeless population in 2021 because of the pandemic and all that stuff. The homeless population is actually higher now than it was in 2020 by about 8%. Right. Now, granted, it did go, you know, according to Karen Bass, and he's probably right, it probably did go down a little bit after it hit its peak in about 2023 or 2024, but it's still higher now. And of course, preliminary numbers for 2026, Department of Housing and Urban Development's point in time count shows that homelessness increased by about 1,200 people in the city of Los Angeles between 2026 and last year. But anyways, here's another extra wrinkle in the sense that, you know, I'm building more shelters and stuff like that, which is great. But the thing is, it's akin to what she said about meth addicts not having teeth, which I think it was last week. She said, you know, meth addicts don't have teeth. You can't be successful unless you have teeth. So we got to give health care to meth addicts, which totally missed the root cause of the problem, right? Meth addicts don't have teeth because they don't care because they're hooked on meth, right? So you can give them all the free dental care you want. You're not going to help the meth addicts, right? You have to address the underlying problem, which is the meth addiction, right? Now, apply that by analogy to the homeless problem. Most homeless people in the United States, the ones that are unsheltered, right? The unhoused, living out on the streets, sleeping in cars, park benches, tents along the sidewalk, their problem isn't that they don't have affordable housing. Their problem is that they are either A, hooked, addicted to some drug or alcohol, or they have a mental health issue. So again, giving them a home isn't going to help them with that underlying problem, right? It's like giving dental care to a meth addict, right? Because, well, in fact, a lot of these homeless people might be meth addicts, but, you know, right? So unless you address the underlying problem, which is either the substance abuse or drug addiction and or mental health, you know, building all the homes you want isn't going to really put a major dent in it. Oh, speaking of which, this is another extra wrinkle here. And this is from townhall.com. And this is one of those, like, if this is true, this also blows up the central narrative argument that the main cause of homelessness is the lack of affordable housing. This is from Town Hall. The homeless crisis in Los Angeles is even worse than you think, by Dimitri Bolt, May 19. A new report from California suggests that LA's homelessness crisis may be even worse than it appears. According to the Manhattan Institute City Journal, nearly 40% of the city's homeless population is not from California. Around 6% are not even from the United States. Okay. Let's see here. From the City Journal, in 2020, the LA City County LA Homeless Services Authority found that one-third of unsheltered Angelenos became homeless outside of Los Angeles County. The 2024 nonprofit RAND Corporation reported that 41% of street homeless surveyed across three Los Angeles neighborhoods, Hollywood, Venice, and Skid Row, were, quote, last housed somewhere other than LA County. Both reports cut against the narrative of left-wing politicians and activists who insist that any claim about out-of-town homeless are flooding in LA is a myth. In 2021, the LAHSA stopped publishing previous location data. In 2025, RAND removed that metric from the organization's annual report and included it in a separate but lesser read annex. We asked LAHSA and RAND why they buried this data. LAHSA said it stopped publishing previous location figures because respondents, quote, varying interpretations of the question. RAND claimed it had moved the data to the annex due to the need to save costs on publishing, and confirmed that the data will remain there in the group's upcoming report. So City Journal recreated RAND's 2024 study and even used a slightly larger sample size to ensure accuracy. The results of the problem were even worse than the study's original data. Quote, the results were astounding. 64% of LA's street homeless said they were from outside of the city of Los Angeles. 53% said they were from outside Los Angeles County, a significant increase compared to the LAHSA and RAND studies. Nearly 40% told us they were from other states, and mostly from states that voted for President Trump in 2024. 6% say they were from other countries, including Cuba, Venezuela, and North Korea. This comes as Los Angeles city officials have denied the city's homeless are coming out of state and have continued to downplay the severity of the crisis. Now, why is this important? Because if 64% of Los Angeles' homeless population, that's the unhoused part, not the, you know, sheltered part, right? You can build all the shelters you want. More will keep coming, right? That's the underlying problem. Now, here's the other potential wrinkle. If, and I say if because, you know, who knows if this is true or not, but if 64% of LA's homeless population is from outside of the city, you know, you can do this on artificial intelligence, basically around like 43 to 45,000 is the official homeless population count for everybody in total. You take out 64% of it, you get about, you it reduces it down to about 15,000 and change homeless, right? So you theoretically, if you sent every homeless person in Los Angeles that didn't come from Los Angeles a bus ticket or an airplane ticket home, right, you would get about 15,000 homeless people that came from the city of LA, right? And then you compare that to the shelter bed population for the homeless that the city of LA has, which is about 16 to 17,000. Guess what? You could provide every remaining homeless person in the city of Los Angeles a shelter bed, and you would basically get rid of street homelessness, or the people living out on the street. Now, here are some caveats. Maybe the City Journal's assertion isn't true. Maybe the percentage of people who say they were from outside of the city isn't true. You know, it's always possible, right? But if it was true and you did offer, you had more shelter beds than you actually had homeless people living out on the street, you would still have homeless people because shelters have rules, right? I mean, I would assume homeless shelters in the city of Los Angeles have rules. Like, you can't do drugs, you can't drink alcohol, you can't rape, you can't beat people up, you can't steal other people's things, you got to behave yourself, right? And I'm assuming a good chunk of the homeless people in Los Angeles, as up here in Santa Cruz and San Francisco and Oakland, they don't want to abide by those rules. They want to shoot up with drugs. They want to steal. They want to drink their alcohol. They want to rape, pillage, plunder, and all that good stuff. But, you know, but that, again, that would probably, but that would undercut the central claim of homeless advocates in California and probably in other parts of the country too, that the primary cause of homelessness is the lack of affordable housing. No, right? I mean, because if it was the lack of affordable housing, why would all these people move to a place where they had a home outside of city LA to a place where they didn't have a home, right? Or that 4 to 6% of the people that came from outside of the country in the United States. Why would you leave a country where you had a home to come to a place, to come to America where you want to live out on the street? That makes no possible sense to me, but, you know, be that as it may, you know, who knows? But again, maybe that's a glitch in the AI or our computer simulation that we're obviously living in the Matrix. Again, maybe the glitch is the contradiction. And of course, you know, the same people who say, well, you know, the problem of homelessness is lack of affordable housing, kind of have a huge overlap with the same type of people who say, well, you know, the best way to help drug addicts, homeless drug addicts, is give them needles and crack pipes. So, you know, how, I don't know how that works, but, you know, I would think that, you know, giving drug addict homeless people free needles to shoot up more drugs would be a terrible idea. But I'm sure there's some progressive academic or some homeless advocate who probably will cite a whole bunch of baloney sausage studies that say, well, you know, doing this is going to really, really help them because of harm reduction is an obvious thing of helping these poor homeless people, as the case may be. And of course, now, if that had worked, and, you know, we didn't have a homeless problem, or the homeless problem had dramatically improved since 2021, you know, we could argue, but I wouldn't be as skeptical. But the situation got way, way worse in 2021 and 2022 when cities were providing drug needles and safe injection rooms and all sorts of good stuff to homeless people, and since then we spent probably tens of billions of dollars, and the problem's gotten worse. In fact, the state of California in general, the homeless population now is 187,000 people, which apparently, according to, you know, HUD records, I think is way up from the 137,000 for the entire state of LA the year before that. So I don't know. You know, I mean, again, if it was, now it could also be that maybe the Department of Housing and Urban Development's point in time counting is flawed. I'm sure it's not capturing every single homeless person in LA, right? Because there are people who fall through the cracks and there's some counting errors, right? But I think as it's useful in the sense that if you use the same methodology, hopefully you will at least capture the trend. So whatever inaccuracies you get is going to be relatively consistent year to year to year. That's the fundamental assumption. But, you know, but again, it's getting worse. It's not getting better, at least the homeless situation. Or, you know, what else is there? The California, you know, you have the California high-speed rail. There's no way they're going to get it from LA to San Francisco because there's no money for it. But, well, we're going to get it from Bakersfield to Merced, and isn't that going to be great? Well, let's see here. This is from SoDoesItMatter.com. California's bullet train may not even reach downtown Bakersfield. You can't make this up, by John Fleischman, May 18. So apparently, according to the latest report from the Legislative Analyst Office from the California High-Speed Rail Authority, the first segment, the easiest, cheapest segment to make, which is supposedly from Bakersfield to Merced, won't go all the way to downtown Merced, and it won't go all the way to downtown Bakersfield, right? Apparently, according to this, the northern end of the stop will stop 3.5 miles south of downtown Merced. The southern end of the high-speed rail is going to stop 6 miles north of the original downtown Bakersfield station. So you can't even get from Bakersfield to Merced for the $35 to $38 billion. And yet people still want to put more money into this, right? Because I think the updated cost is like $220 billion, up from the original $30 billion that was proposed in 2008 from LA to San Francisco. You can't even get from Bakersfield to Merced for $38 billion. What are we, is this, hello? But anyways, so people be crazy. But anyways, I think, I do have more time, but I also have more things on the stack of stuff. But you know what? I figure it might be too far into the podcast. So I guess we'll call it a day. So thank you very much for joining me here at the Danger Zone podcast, at the SantaCruzVoice.com and KSCO.com's Podcast Alley. I've been your host, Jim Tu, and I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Join me next week and have a great Memorial Day weekend.